You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brennan. We're going to have a power culture type of event with Kevin Faye, 50 minutes of the afternoon. It seems like the news is out that, yes, something that even now Donald Trump is admitting to, or agreeing to, I guess. Admitting, well, that sounds like he is taking some sort of responsibility for something that happened. That's not the case. It is it's definitely an agreement, not an admission, when it comes to Russian hacking of the election. So that happened. And then what's up with this dossier? Do we know exactly the legitimacy of some of this information? Well, is this a movie? Is this some kind of like crazy plot, or is this really happening? Right? It sometimes it's like, you just ask yourself, how did this, my goodness, what? So we'll talk about that this afternoon. Also, we kind of mentioned this some time ago, and now it's coming out with even more information. 18 women suing USA gymnast and Michigan State over sex abuse. And this just extensive information about this world and what has happened when it comes to the world of professional gymnasts and training. It's tragic. My goodness. And then the stock market taking a plunge after this press release from, or excuse me, this press conference from President-elect Donald Trump because of what he said about the pharmaceutical industry. We'll talk about that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Waiting for James Bond to pop out somewhere, right? 007. Coming to the rescue, doing something, figuring this thing out. KGB, CIA, president-elect, an election cycle, all of this with, wow, just, I mean, my goodness, what a crazy bunch of craziness, right? I mean, my goodness, it's a crazy bunch of craziness. That's all that can be said about this. And who's telling the truth, who's not? I mean, jeez, right? It's where we are. Now, BuzzFeed. I don't know. I haven't researched it enough to know exactly who else has come out with this, but it's BuzzFeed. I mean, they're legit as far as generally presenting news that I think is real. But it is BuzzFeed. We're not talking about this is coming from the New York Times or from CNN or even Fox News, right? Not that Fox News would ever present this, but still, BuzzFeed coming out with this supposed information on a dossier from the KGB, I guess, or from the Russian government somehow, that says they've got a bunch of dirt on Trump. And because of the dirt, that's kind of the reason why he's been as he's been in this in the beginning with this kind of sort of, at best, I think we could say laissez-faire sort of attitude when it comes to Russia and their involvement. And, you know, go all the way back to that odd statement that I said at the time. That's, yeah, and I think others, it wasn't just me saying, is this a national security breach that this guy is welcoming to say, I hope Russia hacks her emails about this batch of 30,000. Which, by the way, in my book, that's not a lot of emails. When you get, and I'm on nowhere near a level of Secretary of State, but I get 300 to 500 emails a day, right? So I don't know how to do that math, but it's, what, 3 months worth of emails maybe for me. So it's not a lot. Not a lot of emails, really. But, you know, this was, I'm not saying that Hillary should have won, of course not. But I'm saying she lost over 3 months worth of emails. They could have potentially fallen into foreign or enemy hands, I suppose. But to no one's knowledge do we know that it happened. And I think that if Russia would have had those, don't you think they would have released them? If you want some real damning information, well, here it is. Here's your emails. Presidential hopeful, here they all are. That batch that everybody was concerned about could have been vulnerable. Well, guess what it was? And here it is. That was never delivered. It was never anything of that nature that came to fruition. And this is where we are now. And I know that, you know, it's obvious. People know. I'm no fan. No fan of Donald Trump. Did not vote for him. Voted conservative for my congressman and my senator. But I don't trust that Trump's a true conservative. I'm not sure what he's true to, really, other than his own self-interests, quite frankly. But it's interesting that it was denial, 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 until now, where it looks like it's indisputable, and now it looks like he's even... somehow more deeply involved in all of this, that he's willing to come out and say, well, you know what, yeah, maybe based on the evidence I've seen that there could have been some interference. Very interesting. And then there's plenty of denials of this is a crazy story, this never happened. Well, here's what we know. And in any situation of this nature, when something like this happens, there is one thing for certain. Someone's lying. Someone is lying. Now, I think in any election cycle, you can trust that somebody's lying. You can trust that. Generally, when you get beyond the election, you kind of hope that things die down and we kind of get to this point of let's kind of just get on and forget about the whole election. It's kind of like what Trump did. I mean, to his credit, when he won, he said, okay, I'm not going to push anything on Hillary. We don't need to pursue criminal charges. I don't need to enact a special investigator. Why did he do that? Because somebody's got dirt on him? Maybe. Could it be that he just said, you know what, it was all political. It was all election stuff. The election's over. I won. I don't need to pursue that. Could be. And if that's the case, well, that undoubtedly makes sense, right? That's good. That's a good thing. So in all of this, there's a lot of questions at this point because the election's over. Do we really need to play the political games? And, you know, I mean, go back to the Nixon administration. There were political games after the election, well after the election. There were political games after Nixon being a vice president, then to the presidency, and then these bizarre political games that ultimately ended up in his impeachment. So, but that was from him playing games back at the Democrats. And a very insecure, obviously, dynamic there where this guy just had to keep tabs on everything. I don't know that we see that in Trump yet. I haven't seen that. Granted, it might still be too soon. But what appears to be the case is quite the opposite. Maybe I'm wrong. There's been at least an appearance of a lot of unnecessary political pop-ups, like the Comey thing. Why did that happen? We're in the home stretch of the election. Oh, we're going to reopen this investigation. Now, that is in the election, and it could be seen as political wrangling, no doubt. But it certainly wasn't necessary. So, in this now, wow. First off, if this is true, as we say frequently when these things pop up, if any of this is remotely true, we need to know. We need to know. Because it would be grounds then to say this individual is unfit for the presidency. If there's some sort of blackmail deal going on, Russia's got information, and they wanted him, right? I mean, this is the storyline, just so you understand. They wanted him as president because he could be a pawn. And the way that Russia could control the U.S. was with Donald Trump as president. And if you recall, when it kind of looked like, because polls were going in the direction of Hillary, when it looked like that, do you remember what happened? Russia started calling their people home, right? Their foreign operatives, their delegates, their Russian people in various places across the globe, because they seem to be planning something. Like perhaps a war. Therefore, they decided to make this call to their people. Trump wins, and that's gone. That's gone from the equation. So we can only assume that they were only prepared to do that if Hillary was in the White House. Because maybe they didn't have anything on her to control her in the fashion that they could control Trump. That's what all of this is. This is the question it's all asking. Please understand that. Now, yes, it sounds like the stuff that movies are made of. It sounds like a plot straight out of Hollywood. No question. But the question is it, or is this something funky? And I think that that's where we are at this point, and that's an answer we don't have. The other question is it an answer that we can get? So, wow. Lion Ted, Crooked Hillary, all of the opponents. What was Mario? Was it just Little Mario? Maybe he didn't really have Marco Rubio. Maybe didn't have a derogatory nickname for him, but you know, who knows? I think at this point, that's the only thing we can say. Sure, the Trump supporters are going to say that's crazy. The Trump opponents are going to say, well, certainly seems fishy. But at the very least, we got to stand in the middle of all of this and go, who the heck knows? We have no clue. We have no clue. This is weird. It's bizarre. It smells fishy. But you know what? I mean, go back, and I'll invite you to do this. Go back certainly to the pre-election 2008 of the crazy stuff that was out there. I mean, crazy, crazy stuff that people were saying about Barack Obama. Go back and look. It wasn't just the birther thing. It wasn't just people saying, was he born in the U.S.? What's up with this guy? Like crazy accusations. There was a guy who was prepared to testify before a grand jury that he had bought drugs and had sex with the then senator from Chicago. I mean, all of this. I mean, go back. Not the first time crazy, crazy, supposedly true dirt has shown up. And then somebody was lying, just like now. That's the only thing we know from all of this. We do know the power of Trump and what he says when it comes to the stock market. We'll talk about that in a moment. More to come on Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. By the way, after 30 some odd years or more, or give or take, of doing this kind of stuff, depends on really what you mean, this kind of stuff. Public speaking, literally since an 8-year-old. Radio, definitely for about 30 some years. I still can't type and talk at the same time. It just doesn't work. Try many times. Type something. If I'm saying what I'm typing, then maybe, but oh geez. You caught me doing that, just so you know. So drug stocks plunge, according to Bloomberg.com, as Trump threatens to force price bidding. Now, I think most of us would agree that lower medication costs are a good thing. And we hear all the stories about amazingly low prices in other countries. And supposedly there are those who go out of the country and are able to get drugs and get treatment and all of this. And that may happen. But here in the U.S., we see Pharma Dude, right? Was that what we called him? The guy who decided, hey, it's a free market. I got the market cornered. I can jack the prices up wherever I want to, however I want to. That happens. But it's interesting that the president-elect has the power that he has to basically say, we're going to open up the opportunity for bidding. And my goodness, the next thing you know, the drug stocks plummet. So, joking to some degree that you know, you say you're about the economy, but you make a statement and it tanks the markets. There has to be, I think this is, if let's put it this way, if the Republicans are going to do anything when it comes to healthcare, if they're going to really fix the problems, then it cannot just be, let's make sure everyone has health care. Let's go back and go, how do we control the ridiculous costs? And we know that big drug companies, they're big drug companies. They're there making a lot of money. They're doing what they do. And you could justify it and say, well, they're spending a lot of money on research and development, and they're finding these drugs. And yeah, but they also go to market at a pretty high price. And I have no idea what that profit margin is. Who knows? But we do know that when a large amount of the cost is being eaten by healthcare, because people have copay plans or they're paying very little for the drug, well, then that's part of the problem. Would you not agree? And I am a free market, free enterprise. You go, you do your thing. But when it comes to life-saving drugs that people need to get their hands on that they can't afford, I'm a father of a type 1 diabetic. And I do know that there's out-of-pocket expenses. If I had to pay them, it would just be crippling. We couldn't do it. Well, we got to have some sort of health insurance, some sort of subsidy to help out in that, because otherwise that the expense of literally life or death drugs. Now, this isn't a luxury drug or a erectile dysfunction drug or, you know, you need to lower your cholesterol, which, you know, the jury is out on whether that's even really a concern or not. Whatever, it's not that. This is a drug that without this, my son would not be able to live. And the costs are so insurmountable that out of pocket, it would be virtually impossible. That's what we're up against. So maybe not such a bad thing to say, let's look at a way to get drug prices down while we're overhauling the whole system. You got to consider that. So it can't just be insurance. Hey, we're going to put some sort of insurance in place and the drug companies can keep on doing what they're doing. Well, hey, let them bid on the prices, on the contracts, get the stuff that, because there's a lot of government contracting that goes on in these companies as well. and let's see where the market goes. Which, of course, at this point, the market tanked, but that was in reaction, a knee jerk to what he said. Well, let's see where the overall leveling could come when it comes to healthcare expenses and what we may be seeing. That's good. And if you want a greater subsidy or greater containment when it comes to the healthcare opportunities for the citizenry, because government might be able to do something, well, there's one place that could potentially be cost cutting and cost effective, right? I think we got to see that. So this bizarre, creepy story. I mean, my goodness, you know, this day and age, anything can be hacked. I think we know that. If you look at this crazy story from St. Jude Medical Department, Chicago Tribune is reporting this, that the heart devices, you got a pacemaker, it could potentially be hacked. I'll never forget going to see my dad in the hospital one time when he had a surgery when I was younger. And while we were there, in the little snack room, you could buy sandwiches and put them in the microwave, right? And we didn't have a microwave at this time. This was well before we had stepped into the 20th century. And there was a sign on the microwave saying, persons with pacemakers, do not operate this microwave. And I thought, wow. Oh, you gotta. If you had a pacemaker, you'd have to watch where you are around microwaves. That's kind of crazy. Now, if you're a person of prominence, right? I mean, this is kind of what they're talking about. Most of us, nothing to worry about. Who's going to hack your pacemaker? Who cares? But if you're a big-time government decision maker, oh, and you happen to have a pacemaker, could be some concern there. It's a bizarre story at best. Or if there was some sort of thought about, well, let's disrupt the lives of many individuals all at one time, and there's a way to hack and to control pacemakers for some sort of cyber threat that could result in mass panic, well, then there you go. You get that as well. But it's just weird. Weird. This is where we are. It's weird that this is the reality, right? That we've arrived at this reality with all of the potential realities we could have had, right? Here's where we are. We're living in a sci-fi spy mystery movie. Really, right? Everywhere you look, there's this, there's that, there's my goodness, where is this going? It would be very easy to lose hope. It would be very easy to say, wow, this is crazy. But that's why, as people of faith, we have to understand there's always something bigger. Always something bigger. And every step is a step towards something bigger. And every experience is an experience to say, what am I supposed to learn from this? Can I step back? Can I think about this? Can I get a grasp on this? Can I see where God is leading this? And is there a way that through this, ultimately, I can find a deepening of faith? Because that's what it's got to be, right? That's what it always has to be. We have to get to a point of, are we deeper? Are we further along? Have we found a place of deeper trust? Have we found a place of deeper resilience through grace? We found a place of more enthusiasm and more opportunity to grow within our faith. What are we doing? Because they're there every day. We've talked about several of them this afternoon. And I think a lot of times it begins with fear. What is the fear? What are we most afraid of? What are we concerned about? Can we look at that and can we then begin to say, wait a minute? If I'm asked not to be afraid, and I am afraid, well, there's something here that I have yet to resolve. How do I resolve this in a way that says, okay, I get it. And I'm not supposed to fear because I know the guide comes through, will come through, has come through, will continue to come through if I remain faithful. And I know that that's going to happen. One of my favorite passages of all scripture, and I've got a handful of them, but one of them that immediately comes to mind that I can recall from verbatim is that Romans 8:28, all things work for good for those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. All things work for good. So that means even the worst, even the scariest, even the most frightening, even the most wrong, as we see it, wrong. This is just wrong. It can work for the good. If we invite grace into that equation and we begin to understand that God is bigger, and yes, we ultimately have a solution. That's what makes all the difference. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Interesting probe. We've seen this in professional gymnast training and now coming out with this lawsuit against Michigan State and this former Olympian trainer that apparently a number of years of abuse. And yeah, it's interesting that this happens, but it often happens this way, right? Where there's undoubtedly something that was unknown for a long time, and then it comes to light. We saw this in the priest abuse scandal. We've seen this a number of times in various incarnations. And usually there's a something that kind of begins to crack, and then the floodgates open, and I think we're seeing that now. And many young women who were either too afraid to speak out or even maybe we're unsure that it was, yeah, I think there's that, like, did this even really happen? Could this have happened? Could this have just been my imagination? Was I, and now others speaking out. So, yeah, this happens. So don't think that just because it's been a long time and now there's these women speaking out that there's something to be gained. It's not like this is someone with a ton of money and you're trying to extort from them. That's just not happening here. That's not what's going on. It is undoubtedly a coming to light of something that was a problem. And it's chilling. I think that if you look, you know, I posted this on my Facebook page, it's been some weeks ago, but there was an investigation going back years showing that this is not isolated. And my goodness, it's terrible that this would occur where there's young women with such vulnerability that supposedly in some sort of therapeutic medicinal something happening, that there's inappropriate touching taking place. I mean, that's just unfortunate, weird, and it makes you want to stay away from that, because where's it going to happen? Where's it going to strike next? So pray for these women who have been abused, pray for those who are accused and who may even be very guilty. We still have to ask for grace for them and hope that something good comes of their lives as well because of this. Question being asked by a Catholic news agency, is Pope Francis interested in unity? We've seen the start to the new year with a prayer for Christian unity, as happened and perhaps has happened traditionally with the papacy, but here's a guy who is not afraid to speak and say what he believes and to stand in that with confidence that this is what the church believes. And as a result of it, it's not about trying to bring everybody into the same understanding as much as it is, this is how it is. And he's tough on those who are his opponents. But at the same time, he's very, very welcoming and outreaching. Is that a word? He's willing to reach out to those who are outside of the Catholic faith in other faith traditions. But again, very tough on what I would call the modern-day Pharisee. Right? There's plenty of those who are more Catholic than the Pope, as I've said many times in this papacy. There are way, way more who are more Catholic than this Pope than ever before. Right? This is a new record of armchair papacy candidates, because there are plenty just convinced, oh, what he's saying is wrong, he's a heretic, he's this, he's that. And I think that, unfortunately, I've had these conversations, and it's weird, because there are those who really, really just want to maintain their separatism. They just believe that they're in their class and category, and no one ever needs to come close to them. There doesn't need to be any opening up for them. They are who they are. They're of their birds of feather flocking and sticking together, and they're just going to stay that way. And it's weird, because we could think we want unity, when in reality, what we're saying is we want unity of those who believe like us. We want unity with those who look like us. We want unity with those who think like us enough that we never have to disagree. Well, first off, good luck, right? Good luck with that one. You can find a group that think and look and act and sound and look whatever and no disagreements. Wow, okay. Maybe it's just me, but I don't generally find those groups. But at the same time, I am willing to exert every effort and to make every possible compromise and consolation to find ways to meet people in the middle, at the very least in the middle, maybe beyond the middle, maybe where they are, maybe go all the way there. And I try to do this as effectively as I can. And you may hear things out of my mouth when I'm speaking to certain people that may shock you, because it's just the way they talk. I'm going to talk like they talk. I'm going to be right there. I'm going to be holier than thou or pretend to be some kind of goody two-shoes. I'm right there with them. Because as St. Paul says, when I'm with the Jew, I'm like the Jew. When I'm with the Gentile, I'm like the Gentile. Whatever he has to say in that passage, he's basically saying, I'm going to be socially and behaviorally adaptive to whomever I'm with, not to compromise what I believe, but to win them to Christ. Because what may seem crass to others seems like conversation to those that you're reaching out to, and the opportunity then to step towards something different because of that beginning point is critical and crucial. But if we walk around with this bar of accessibility, right? If we are so inaccessible because people don't even think we're real. I mean, we know those people. And you know, I know that there are those who are so purely devout and that's just who they are. I get it, and that's great. And we want those people. But I realize for me, that is not what I'm called to. I've been called to a completely different dynamic of relationship that looks like something a little more connective on the level of where people are and who people are. And praise God, I've been able to nurture that. And I know I don't do it well. I realize that. I've horribly deficient frequently. But at least I'm going to try. I'm going to try to meet people where they are. I'm going to try to continue to have that relational element first and foremost. And people generally know where I'm coming from and what I believe, and I don't have to force that on people, but I don't shy away from it either. All right, let's talk about that. Absolutely. Let's go there. Let's have that conversation. And that's weird. I realize that. That's weird for someone to have a perhaps crasser, rougher exterior in social situations, and then at the same time have that type of willingness to go in that direction. But I think it's vitally important. I think we have got to be authentic. I think we've got to be authentically unified with others, with where they are and how they are, build those solid relationships, build that trust, and then be able to take it to the level of, okay, well, this is where I am. This is what I believe. Again, not to force it on them, not to try to convert them necessarily, but just to see that this is where you are, this is what you believe, and oh, okay, well, that guy, wow, that's weird. He's not as uptight as somebody I met. Whatever, right? That might be our role. That might be our job. And all we can do is do what we can, right? In any of these situations, we just have to do what we can to be who we can be. And I think who we can be as we were created to be is something that is pretty darn amazing. Because God wants to use that. He wants to use it because he's created this. He's created you. And he wants you. He wants you to get this understanding that this is what we're all called to. Right? It's not just for you, not just for me. This is for everyone. And this is what we're all about. We're trying to use what God has given us to be the not the best version of ourselves, but the most authentic version, right? Talked about this a little bit yesterday. You get on that level of I'm the best version of myself. There's almost, you know, I mean, I like Matthew Kelly, and I'm not trying to knock him. I'm just saying we can take that too far. I know what he means by it. But don't take it so far that you now become this holier than thou and you're on this other plane that just irritates, right? Just irritates people. That can happen. We can cross that threshold without realizing it. So be aware of that. Be who you were created to be. Be authentic. It's going to be unifying to some. It's going to be abrasive to some. But you know what? You're doing God's part. You're doing God's will with your part, with what you got. As long as you keep that in focus and know that this is what you're called to do, that's how we change the world. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.